hills of Westwood, this is long story short. The Daily Brunis weekly news and culture talk show at UCLAradio.com. I'm Gerardo and I'm 21. I study banking and finance. Now, here have your hosts.
I'm Merle Eric.
And I'm Christiana Cabal. It's 6 p.m. and you're listening to Long Story Short at UCLAradio.com. Follow us on Twitter at Daily Bruin Radio and check out our Daily Bruin Radio Facebook page and like all our stories and interviews. So, Merle, it's 10th week, and how are you feeling about 10th week?
I don't know how I'm feeling about 10th week. I did not plan to start mine with an all-nighter, but I'm gonna stay positive about it.
You're gonna say an all-nighter? Wait. Did you take at least like an hour nap?
I mean, after 7 a.m., I took a 2-hour nap, if that counts.
Merle, I got up at 7 a.m.
You got up at 7 a.m.? Well, how's your 10th week going so far?
It's going all right. It started, I feel like 10th week starts in 9th week, and it just keeps going.
I feel you.
And it hurts to be awake right now. I'm not even tired, it just hurts. But it's okay. We got the show. Anyways, yeah, so actually, this past week, I did something really cool on Saturday. I work at Royce Hall, and the YMF, which is this youth orchestra group, they played this weekend at Royce, and they played the Carnival of the Animals. So it's this famous classical song piece that I'm just in love with. And get this, the main pianist was this 13-year-old, and his name is Tristan Parody.
13,
and he's playing, like, he was incredible, crazy. But anyways, it was my first time watching Carnival of the Animals live, and so I thought I would play a little piece of it. This is not the clip from, like, Saturday, but it's, you know, a clip I found online. Let's listen.
For those of you who don't know, on Long Story Short, we don't mess around. From science and health to arts and politics, local news and campus buzz to social life and dating, we're here to talk about it all. That being said, we've got a fantastic show in store.
To start us off, Professor Richard D. Anderson from the Political Science Department breaks down the crisis in Ukraine, providing context of the Russian occupation of Crimea and what this means for America's relationship with Russia.
After that, we'll talk all about the struggles of 10th week. Stay tuned for stress-free playlists and responses to the sentence, "You know it's 10th week when..." But first, here's more of the Carnival of the Animals. We'll be back after the break.
So tonight in the studio, we have Professor Richard D. Anderson from UCLA's Political Science Department. His field is in comparative politics with a specialization in Soviet politics and foreign policy. He has recently written a book called Discourse, Dictators, and Democrats, Russia's Place in the Global Process, which, and this is from the website I found Professor Anderson, is a study of discursive causation in the process of making democracies. So welcome to the show tonight, Professor Anderson. It's great to have you here. Hello?
I'm here.
Okay. We can hear you now. Sorry about that, guys. Okay. So before we get into recent happenings, let's put the crisis in Ukraine in context. So there's an autonomous region in southeast Ukraine known as Crimea. For centuries, this area has been fought over. Why is this important, and how has Crimea played a part in creating tension between Russia and Ukraine?
Well, most of the population of Crimea consists of people who consider themselves Russians. Now, that they're citizens of Ukraine, which has only been an independent country for 23 years. The people who took power in Kiev recently were mostly West Ukrainians who speak a different language called Ukrainian, think they belong to a different group, and the Russians think they should be the dominant group in Ukraine as they are in Russia. The West Ukrainians resent that. The Russians are afraid of what the West Ukrainians will do.
And so on February 27th, the Crimean parliament was occupied. What events led up to that? Can you break down what exactly happened?
Well, they had a ongoing conflict over a Ukrainian Russian who was president of Ukraine. He was massively corrupt. His son, who was a dentist, ended up $510 million richer while his dad was president, which pretty much speaks to the problem. The West Ukrainians were hostile toward him partly because he was a Russian and partly because he was stealing from them. And they staged a series of demonstrations in the capital, Kiev, which had the ultimate outcome of forcing him to flee the country. He's now suffered a criminal indictment. The Russians in the Russians in Crimea probably aren't that happy about how corrupt he was, but they are happy about having a Russian as president because they think having a Russian as president protects them against the West Ukrainians who they think dislike them. They're probably right about that. Consequently, if they're not going to have a Russian president of Ukraine, if he's going to be forced out of office by an attack by West Ukrainians, then the Russians in Crimea would rather be part of Russia. And so they occupied the parliament building, which their representatives controlled anyway, and started making noises about leaving Ukraine and joining Russia.
Okay, so you said the president has fled, so he's in Russia right now.
He's in Russia right now.
And so what is he doing now? Is he going to return? Or?
Well, Putin, the president of Russia, thinks he's useless. I mean, the guy's job was to work things out in Ukraine so that he would control the situation and make it favorable to Russia. But the problem was he was so greedy that he stole so much money that he actually exacerbated the situation. Putin has said he's useless. He just used some of that stolen money to buy a really fancy house in the best part of Moscow at great expense. There are pictures of him moving into it. I don't think he's going to come back. I think he's finished.
I see. Okay, so prior to our interview today, I was reading a timeline from the Wall Street Journal's interactive webpage covering the happenings in Ukraine. And March 2nd, it said that the Western powers demand withdrawal. The U.S. and its European allies vow to isolate Mr. Putin and punish his nation's economy, demanding he withdraws from Ukraine's Crimean region. So how does this threat impact Russia, and how does it impact the United States and its relationship with Russia?
Well, I mean, I think the Russians think that threat is funny.
Yeah, why so?
Well, to start with, about a third of the natural gas that reaches Western Europe comes from Russia. And if the West Europeans, the only thing they can do with Russia is refuse to buy it. If they refuse to buy it, their factories close, their unemployment rate skyrockets, and they're cold, which, you know, that's not, they've had enough problems in the EU without adding that one. Furthermore, the thing that you really have to worry about is, you know, the U.S. stock market is enormously high. It's the highest. It set a record at the end of last year, and it's close to that record now. And nobody's making profits which justify those stock prices. So the question is, why is all that stock buying going on? Well, part of it is Russian money. Now, when the Russians sell the kind of goods they sell in the world market, oil, all kinds of natural resources, you know, aluminum, all the tungsten in the world, if I'm not mistaken, comes from Russia, and all the platinum. I mean, there's many kinds of commodities that the Russians are selling. They're making money hand over fist doing that. They don't keep that money in Russia because the money will be stolen or confiscated. So they ship it abroad, and the place they put it is probably Wall Street. So, I mean, one thing that would happen if we seize that money or froze it, which is what you would do with it, this ongoing investment in Wall Street would stop, the stock market would crash, and the Obama administration would be in a world of hurt. And that things are bad enough for them as it is. So I don't believe that either the United States or the Europeans have any intent of imposing significant sanctions on Russia. Furthermore, there's nothing Putin can do in response to the U.S. pressure, because I've written about this. He's a centrist candidate. When he was first elected, all the way back in 2000, he almost certainly planted a question in a radio call-in show. And the radio, it's sort of like this one. And the question was, what do you think about the collapse of the Soviet Union? And he said, anyone who doesn't regret the collapse of the Soviet Union has no heart. Anyone who thinks you can put it together in its previous form has no head. Well, that's a carefully moderate position. It's between the people in Russia who would like to have a full-fledged democracy, who say that a full-fledged democracy, they say rightly, a full-fledged democracy is conditional on not controlling places like Ukraine. And on the other hand, there's the communists, who are the strongest opposition party and have been since 1991, who say we just need to put the Soviet Union back together the way it was before 1991. So Russia lost half its population and a third of its territory. It included the cradle of Russia. The equivalent, if you think about the Liberty Bell in Philadelphia, the equivalent in Russia is the capital of Ukraine, Kiev. That's where Russia started. And so if we lost half our population and a third of our country, a lot of Americans would feel we should do anything to put it back together. I don't think everybody would. Somebody would say, well, okay, the circumstances were such that that happened, and we need to accept it. But there would be a strong political force in favor of restoration. And that force looks at Crimea and has looked at Crimea ever since 1993 as the perfect example of a place that should be Russia and isn't. And so Putin, if he wants to be the middle between those two forces, he can't just be let Crimea go, because then he looks like a member of the Democrats. And his whole strategy, the strategy that enables him to dominate Russian politics, has been to not look like the Democrats while not being the communists either. And that's what he's doing in Crimea. And so he can't respond to what the Americans want.
Okay, so yeah. On the note of, you know, like Putin and his strategies, I had a question. While Hillary Clinton was speaking at UCLA, she kind of seemed to draw comparisons between the actions of Vladimir Putin and Adolf Hitler on a number of different occasions. What are your thoughts on this? Why do you think that she brought Hitler into it? What was the reasoning behind that?
Okay. Let me first say that Hillary Clinton's factual statements were correct. I mean, this whole business of intervening in Czechoslovakia supposedly to protect the Sudeten Germans is exactly like what Putin is doing, intervening in Crimea, supposedly to protect Crimean Russians. Now, it was perfectly true that the Sudeten Germans were suffering a lot of discrimination from the Czechs before World War II, so that Hitler's claim to protect them, he really was kind of protecting them, but that's no excuse for doing what Hitler did. But what's sad about Hillary's factually perfectly accurate statement, which nothing Hillary does is not deliberate. While it's perfectly true, the question is, does Putin have in mind what Hitler had in mind, which was using the Sudeten Germans as a pretext to start World War II, kill 40 million people, slaughter Jews, this entire set of events that we know about? Comparing Putin with Hitler is ridiculous. I mean, it's absurd. It's slanderous. I don't want to defend a guy who's in many ways a bad guy, but you can be a really bad guy and not be Hitler. And so I think that was actually rather irresponsible of Hillary. You notice that the next day she backed away from it, and rightly so. The other thing is, every time the U.S. wants to take dramatic action in world affairs, we claim we're dealing with Hitler. When George Bush, the elder, started the first war with Iraq, on Sunset Boulevard, there appeared a billboard. It had a picture of Hitler with, really black hair and a little mustache. Next to it was a picture of Stalin with really black hair and a little mustache. Next to that was a picture of Saddam Hussein with really black hair and a little mustache. Well, I mean, Saddam Hussein was another really bad guy, much worse than Putin. But again, he wasn't Hitler. So one of the things we really need to do is keep these things in perspective by not making statements that compare people like Putin to people like Hitler.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. It's all about the person and the context. You can't just put that person's name on something like that.
Definitely.
Well, and also, but the other thing I'm saying that I don't want you to miss, this is just a standard U.S. public relations technique in foreign policy to say, oh, we have a really big crisis. We must take action.
Yeah.
But the action the U.S. intends to take is not mobilizing a whole army and fighting in Ukraine.
What is it?
Would have been the right action if we were dealing with Hitler, but we're not.
But we're not. I understand. Yeah. Got it. We have to wrap it up. I have one more question. How does this affect UCLA students? How should the average student go about updating his or herself with what's happening in Ukraine? And how is the U.S. impacted by this?
Guys, it's 10th week. UCLA students have other stuff to worry about. If I were them, they would.
Okay. You have any more questions, Merle? Is there anything else you'd like to say, Professor Anderson?
Well, thank you very much for this opportunity, and thanks for listening to me at such length.
Yeah, of course. All right, well, that's all we have for our segment on Ukraine. We'll be back after this short break. I'm Christiana Cabal.
And I'm Merle Eric. Keep listening, folks. Coming up, we have UCLA students on air to talk about their 10th week struggles. Oh, so loudly, in hopes that you heard. Silent discos, therapy dogs, meditation, origami, and 24-hour library access can only mean one thing. That's right, 10th week. Since the quarter system is so fast-paced, most students find themselves stressed as they only have a few nights left to prepare for their finals. This past week, radio contributors Chirav Gordon and Quinn Francis went around asking students about some of their personal stress-relieving rituals. Let's take a listen to what they had to say.
So this first clip, the first question they asked was, how do you respond to all-nighters? What do you think about them? So here it is.
Vara, second year math econ. I suck at all-nighters. I don't do them, but good luck to everyone who does.
I'm Rebecca. I'm a fourth year, and I'm a political science major. All-nighters aren't wise the night before your test, but maybe like two nights before your test. Because the night before your test, like you should have like a good night's sleep. And I always have, like, plenty of food and water in my backpack, so whenever I need it, I have it.
My name is Kristen E. Buchanan, and my major is International Development Studies, and I am a first year. All-nighters are not such a great idea because you lose sleep and you're not prepared for your finals. So I prefer to prepare ahead by studying and just going to office hours and learning as much information as I can to prepare for my finals.
I'm Crystal. I'm a third-year economics major. I've pulled an all-nighter this quarter for a paper I had to write that's due the next day, and it's not the healthiest solution, but I feel like when you have to pull a deadline, it's something you have to do. Survival tips, I mean, coffee is my solution. I love coffee. Keeps me up.
Oh, yeah, I definitely agree. Coffee, definitely. Coffee is the key. Ice coffee, hot coffee.
Any coffee.
Yeah, well, see, the next question we asked students on Bruin Walk was, what is on your stress-free playlist?
Ooh.
Ooh, yeah.
I'm Catherine He, and I'm a sophomore. Probably Dramamine by Modest Mouse.
Daniel Tran, my major is linguistics and French.
Thanks.
Any Kesha song.
My name's Dylan Reese. I'm a third year physics major. Menopause Man by Ariel Pink.
Mental Woman. Born of Woman.
Whoever said Timber, I definitely agree with that. That's 100% my song. Anytime I run, anytime I'm stressed, it's 100% that. Do you have a song?
Yeah, I won't tell you the title. I'll just play it. Can we hear it? Does it sound familiar?
It does. Oh, wait, I love this song.
The Eye of a Tiger?
Yeah.
The Eye of a Tiger, it's the thrill of... Okay, I'm going to stop now, and we're going to go on to more on 10th week. So what's our other 10th week subject?
Our other 10th week subject that we closed off asking people about their 10th week is... We ask them to finish the sentence, you know it's 10th week when...
You know it's 10th week when...
Oh, brushing their teeth at Powell in the morning.
You know it's 10th week when... You're always tired, and you eat lots of junk food, and stay up late, and wake up early, and are ready for spring break.
You know it's 10th week when I start binge-watching TV shows.
You know it's 10th week when you're really stressed out, and you don't have any free time to do fun things, and you're studying all the time, switching between subjects.
You know it's 10th week when you eat a full bag of Flaming Hot Cheetos at midnight.
Hello, you know it's 10th week when you start planning for spring break?
When you wear yoga pants all day, every day.
Relate to any of those, you know it's 10th week when?
Kind of, sort of. I know it's 10th week when I talk about studying more than I actually study.
That's true. Studying becomes all talk, and then nighttime hits and it's off to the books, right?
Off to the books.
I know, let's see. I know it's 10th week when... Yeah, I know it's 10th week when... Were you outside? There was, like, this religious conversation going on.
That.
Yeah, and I think that, yeah, that distracts us from studying.
Yeah.
So I know it's 10th week when people on Bruin Walk just go at it.
Anything but studying.
Anything but studying. Yeah. So anyways, you've been listening to Long Story Short, the Daily Bruins weekly news and culture talk show at UCLAradio.com. Don't forget to check us out and like us on the Daily Bruin Radio Facebook page or follow us on Twitter at Daily Bruin Radio. The show is also available as a podcast on iTunes under Daily Bruin Radio.
A special thanks to Professor Anderson and all who gave us thoughts on 10th week. Also, thanks to our broadcast producer and my co-host for the night, Christiana Cabal, our radio director, Bianca Brosis, and our sound engineer, Hannah Jacobs, even though Christiana helped a lot with the sound tonight.
Yes, and yeah, good luck with finals and 10th week. Just one more week, and then spring break. Hello.
See you in Powell tonight, UCLA.